So she grew in Garza all the way to my own Krishna Prasthaya in the Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Vitimani and Namaste Sanchat today. Gauravali Pacharani Nivasesa Sinyoni Vaskajari Satarani Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapadatamalam Shri Varun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sadhrajatam Sadhana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadhvaitam Sadhadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shri Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Jaya Chaitanya Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda January 10th, 2013 in Bahrain. And you don't have the verse up, right? No board?
Sorry?
There's no board with the verse?
No.
No, okay. So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Panchalila, Chapter 5. Ramananda Roy instructs Prajana Misra, text 121. Ara ega kariyacha parama pramada deha dehi beda ishware kaliya aparada. Ara eka.
Another one.
Kariyacha.
You have done.
Parama.
The supreme.
Pramada. Illusion. Deha dehi beda. The distinction between the body and the soul. Ishvare, in his lordship, Kale, you have done aparada, an offense. So, again, the background on this is there was one Brahmana who had written about Mahaprabhu and Lord Jagannath, and all the devotees had really enjoyed it. Oh, this is wonderful. Lord Chaitanya should hear it. Lord Chaitanya should hear it. And Mahaprabhu says, before I hear anything, it has to be approved by Swarup Damodar. He has to approve. So the devotee showed it to Swarup Damodar. Swarup Damodar asked this Brahmana, you please recite the first verse. So he recited the first verse, and all the devotees said, very good, very good, very good. But Swarup Damodar said, please explain what do you mean by this verse. That's very significant. He asked the author, what do you mean? Sometimes when someone says something, we immediately decide what they mean. But he asked, what do you mean? What is your intended meaning? And the Brahmin told him, and then upon hearing this intended meaning, Swarup Damodar became very angry. The Brahmana was talking about how Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath were the same, and that Lord Chaitanya was the soul of the body of Jagannath, and that Mahaprabhu, by coming to Puri, had brought dead matter to life. And his understanding was that the deity of Jagannath was dead, and that Mahaprabhu was the soul of the body of Jagannath. So he was making two mistakes. He was thinking that Krishna has a material body, and he's thinking that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a jiva. So again, this was subtle, and the devotees in general didn't understand what this Brahmana was intending. But Swarup Damodar, he could understand. Okay, so read this translation in purport. You are in complete illusion, for you have distinguished between the body and the soul of his lordship, Lord Jagannath or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is a great offense. Purport. When one differentiates between the body and the soul of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he immediately becomes an offender. Because the living entities in the material world are generally covered by material bodies, the body and the soul of an ordinary human being cannot be identical. So, first point Prabhupada's making here is what? body and soul, cannot be identical for the conditioned souls. But that's not true for God. The Supreme Lord bestows the fruits of one's activities, for he is the Lord of the results of fruit of actions. He is also the cause of all causes, and he is the master of the material energy. Therefore, he is supreme. An ordinary living being, however, in his material condition, experiences the results of his own fruit of activities, and therefore falls under their influence. So what's the difference that Prabhupada's giving here? Why are we getting this body? Due to our karma, the fruits of our activities. But Krishna doesn't experience the fruits of activities. He gives the fruits of activities. Going on, even in the liberated stage of Brahma-Bhuta identification, he engages in rendering service to his lordship. So another difference between the jiva and God is that the jiva is the servant. So far we've listed three differences. One is that we are different from the body and Krishna is the same as the body. In other words, another difference, we are getting our karma. Krishna is giving the karma. Another is that we are the servant and Krishna is the master. Thus there are distinctions between an ordinary human being and the Supreme Lord. Karmis and jnanis who ignore these distinctions are offenders against the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can see that even if you went to the king here and you said, oh, you're an ordinary citizen, he would feel offended. Correct? Right? I mean, even if you go to a temple president, you say, well, you're not really the temple president. Right? So therefore it's an offense if you go to God and you say, oh, you're not actually God. He feels hurt. His feelings are hurt. If you do something, if you are in charge of some project and someone says, oh, you didn't really do anything, you feel bad. So Krishna also feels bad. He feels offended. An ordinary human being is prone to be subjugated by the material energy, whereas his lordship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna, or Lord Jagannath, is always the master of the material energy and is therefore never subject to its influence. So now here's a fourth distinction, that the jiva is subjected to the material energy and Krishna is the Lord of the material energy. He's never subjected to the material energy. His lordship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has an unlimited spiritual identity never to be broken, whereas the consciousness of the living entity is limited and fragmented. So now here's a fifth difference. What is that? The Lord's consciousness is unlimited, and our consciousness is limited. I don't even know what someone else is thinking. You ever get in an argument with somebody because you guessed what they were thinking and you were wrong? Or someone guessed what you were thinking? Right? The living entities are fragmental portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Where's that verse from? Bhagavad Gita, which chapter? 15. Verse? It is not that they are covered by the material energy in conditioned life, but become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead when freed from the influence of material energy. Such an idea is offensive. So here Prabhupada's looking at what word in this verse of chapter 15?
Hare Krishna, card number 261295. Somebody pop wrongly, they are creating a problem for us. Please remove the car from there. 261295, whose car keys? Correct number? 261295.
Over there,
Chaitanya had a
car.
Chaitanya had a problem.
Okay. So, what point is Prabhupada making here? He's quoting from this verse, Mamai Vamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. And his point was that it's not that we're individual only when we're conditioned, and when we get liberated, we merge with God. So, what word in this verse is he basing that on? Sanatana. Very good. So, we are eternally a fragment. So one cannot say, okay, these differences, we've mentioned, what, five differences so far between the jiva and God. If you say, oh, these differences exist only in conditioned life, but once we're liberated, these differences don't exist anymore. And he's quoting from Bhagavad Gita, no, Sanatana, we are eternally a fragment of the Lord. Now, fragment, of course, doesn't mean like a broken piece. Not like that. But still, we're limited. Okay, going on. According to the considerations of Mayavadi fools, Prabhupada would sometimes very, how do we say, direct? According to the conclusions of Mayavadi fools, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts a material body when he appears in the material world. A Vaishnava, however, knows perfectly well that for Krishna, Lord Jagannath, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, unlike for ordinary human beings, there is no distinction between the body and the soul. Of course, this was the first point Prabhupada made in the purport, so he's reiterating it. That don't think when God comes, he takes on a material body. By the way, this is one of the main tenets of Christian philosophy. They say that Jesus Christ is God who comes to this world and takes on a material body. Even in the material world, his lordship retains his spiritual identity. Therefore, Lord Krishna exhibited all opulences even in his childhood body. So here Srila Prabhupada is giving evidence that when Krishna appears, he has a spiritual body. That when he was a child, he exhibited all opulences. Can you give me an example? Lifted Govardhan Hill. What else?
Killing
the demons. Trinavarta, Sakatashura, Putana did this when he was a little baby. Well, anything else?
Kalinga. Kalinga.
The jewels for the fruit seller.
Kalinga. Kalinga. Snake.
Oh, the snake, Kalia, yes.
Kali.
Sorry, you said that in beautiful Indian accent that I'm sorry.
He showed the whole universe.
Yeah. Showed the whole universe. Yes. What is your native tongue? What is your native language?
Tamil.
Ah, that beautiful, flowing, musical South Indian. Yes, he showed the whole universe within his mouth when he was a little child. More than once, actually. Yes. There is no distinction between the body and the soul of Krishna, whether he is in his childhood body or his youthful body. He is always identical with his body. Even though Krishna appears like an ordinary human being, he is never subjected to the rules and regulations of the material world. So again, Prabhupada's repeating the point, but with more explanation. He is swarat, or fully independent. He can appear in the material world, but contrary to the offensive conclusion of the Mayavadi school, he has no material body. In this connection, one may again refer to the above-mentioned verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.38, Etad Ishanam Isya Prakriti Sto Pitad Gunai Na Yujite Sadatmastair Yata Buddhish Tadashraya. The Supreme Person has an eternal spiritual body. If one tries to distinguish between the body and the soul of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he commits a great offense. So all of us would like to know how to make proper decisions in our life, right? What do I do? Do I go here? Do I go there? Do I take this job? Do I live in this place? Do I marry this person? Do I spend my money on this? How do I become a successful person? How do I find happiness? In order to do that, we have to see what is true. You cannot decide which road to take If there is a sandstorm and you cannot see the road, to decide which road to take, you have to see the road. So how does one see? One can only see when one is in touch with truth. And relative truth does not give you full vision. It gives you relative vision. Relative truth means you see part of some of the roads some of the time. You cannot make good decisions if you only see partially sometimes. And when seeing relative truth, you don't know which part of which road you are seeing. This is the problem with modern science. They are seeing partial truths, but they don't even know which part. The scientists cannot tell you what percentage of the truth they are seeing or what part of the truth they are seeing. They don't know the relationship of their relative vision to the whole. So in order to make proper decisions and be successful, we have to see the absolute truth. But seeing the absolute truth is not a matter of knowing a mathematical formula. The absolute truth is not something impersonal. And it's not so easy to see the absolute truth. Here we're finding that even the residents of Jagannath Puri, who were direct associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they were subject to some confusion when they were in contact with this writing. They weren't able to see it clearly. But Swarup Damodar was able to see, oh, this is actually the truth. And when one can see the truth properly, not only can one make good decisions in this life, but one can achieve ultimate success. Janma karma chame divyam evam yogeti tatvata twakpadeyam punarjanma naitimam eti sorjana. One can not only achieve happiness in this life, but one can also be free of this cycle of birth and death and go back to home, back to Godhead, to Goloka Vrindavan, to the area of Vaikuntha where Krishna is enjoying with Radharani and cowherd boys. So how to know Krishna's activities? We can say, well, that sounds very simple. Janma karma chame divyam. Janma's birth, karma's activities. Okay, Krishna's birth and activities are divine. Simple, finished, now I know. But it's not so simple, because we see that even people trying to understand, they make mistakes. And there's so many religious and spiritual traditions in the world that try to understand who is God, what is the absolute truth, but they don't get it quite right. They think, well, God is just some light, he's just some force, he's just some energy. Oh, if you say that God has a form, then you're committing offenses. Are you my water girl? Thank you. And even people who have some understanding that God has a form, they think, well, it's a material form, it's a temporary form, we become God, and so many confusions. Before I came to the Krishna consciousness movement, I was raised in America, and I was studying at a theological seminary, and I asked the teachers there, how does it say that God wrote on the tablets with his finger if he has no form? What is this finger? They said, it's poetry. They don't really understand. But ultimately, if you don't understand that God is a person, you cannot see clearly. Your vision will become clouded. And we see that if people don't have the proper vision of the absolute truth, they don't even really know how to behave in the world. Their systems of ethics, their systems of government, their systems of social interaction, it doesn't work. So let's look at the different points here. So first point is the difference between the body and the soul. So for ourselves, this is the starting point of spiritual life. One time the devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada asked the devotees, how do you preach? They said, we try to convince people there's a God. Prabhupada says, no, first you convince them that they're not this body. So that's our first point. I'm different from this body. Dehi no smenyata dehe komaram yovanam jarata deha deha. Tahat dehantara praptir dirastatranamuyite. That as I'm changing, like I had a body like that at one point, and now I don't look like that. But I have the same identity. But God is not like that. Now one may think God is like that because Krishna is also a baby. And then he gets older. It's described in the Bhagavatam. Mother Yasoda is looking in his mouth and she sees the teeth coming in. And Krishna is trying to walk. And he's carrying Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head. Right? He's playing with the calves and going in the mud. And so we may think, just like my body is changing, but I have the same spiritual identity that's different from this body. So Krishna's body is also changing and he's different. But no, it's not like that. So how do we know it's not like that? Well, when I have a little child's body, I cannot think like an adult. I cannot act like an adult. I have to act like a child. But when Krishna's a child, he can act like God. His acting like God isn't dependent on whether his body looks like that of a tiny baby or that of a youth. He shows the universal form to Arjuna on the battlefield. He shows the universal form lying in the lap of his mother. But that doesn't happen with our changing body, does it? Right? When we get an old body, we can't run around like a little child anymore. But when Krishna has, you know, when he's older on the battle of Kurukshetra, he still has all the potency and the energy of a young person. There's no change in who he is. And he can manifest. So there's stories that even when Krishna is a little child, sometimes he manifests a youthful body. He can manifest whatever form he likes according to his mood. Actually, these differences in Krishna's form are due to his different desires for lila. For me, if I have a desire to do something different, I can change my clothes. If you're going to go work in the garden, you put on different clothes. You're going to go work, you go put on different clothes. You come to the temple, you put on different clothes. And maybe you have a different facial expression. If you're angry, you have a different facial expression. But your whole body doesn't change. But Krishna, because he's the same as his body, when he's in an angry mood, he looks like Nrisimhadev. And depending on his mood, everything changes. But yet it's the same. So in this way we see I'm different from my body. I can't express the same thing in different bodies, but Krishna can. The next thing we can understand about the truth is that I'm under the control of Maya and my karma. Have you ever tried to change your destiny and not been able to? Have you tried that? Think, I'm going to change my destiny. But you failed. Has this happened? You made so many efforts to become richer than you were destined to be, or healthier than you were destined to be, or have a better relationship with someone than you were destined to have, and it didn't work. Correct? And you learn, I'm not the controller. You try to be the controller. You make a plan. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to accomplish this. And it doesn't happen. In fact, it can, the opposite can happen to what you plan. So we're under the control of our destiny. There was one gentleman sitting across the aisle on the plane from me, and he's some big scientist at MIT in America, and he says he works with artificial intelligence. And I said, oh, that's not possible. You're never going to create a living being from matter. He said, oh, yes, we will, because there's no difference between the matter and the spirit. And I said, then why do we want to exist? Why do we want to live if we're just matter? And he's saying, oh, the reason we want to live is so we'll continue our species. I said, that doesn't answer anything. You're just saying we want to live, so we'll want to live. Well, I said, where does this desire come from? He says, well, it just comes from universal law. I said, well, who made universal law? Nobody. So I decided it was useless talking to this person. So he can admit we're controlled by universal law. That he can admit. But But he doesn't admit that there's a controller. It was quite humorous. He said, well, the species that wanted to live, they remained, and the species that didn't want to live, they died. I said, that's just circular reasoning. How is it that some species want to live? Oh, it's just universal law. It's just the way we are. It's the way we're controlled. So we're controlled, right? Yes, we're controlled. Then someone is controlling us. No, nobody is controlling us. So there's a difference. I'm controlled. God is the controller. No one is. He is Swaraj, Prabhupada says here. It comes from Swaraj. In English, we have the word autonomous. You can do what you like. So each of us have a little independence, but Krishna can do whatever he likes. No one can control him. Of course, the devotees control him through love, but that's a different kind of thing. Like your child might control you through love, but you're voluntarily agreeing, okay, I will do what you want. But I'm not voluntarily agreeing to become sick, or to become poor, or to become injured, correct? Or to have some enemy. I don't sign a paper that says, yes, I agree to become sick. It's forced on me. You did this sinful activity? Yeah, you must become sick. I don't want to be sick. You must become sick. So Krishna is not forced like that. You know, the devotee may ask for something. Mother Yasoda says, open your mouth. Okay, open it, but he's not forced. So if I'm forced, somebody is forcing me. Must be. And that person who's forcing me, they have the ability to be forcing me and not be forced. So this is another distinction between us and God. Krishna cannot be under the rules. He's the rule maker. He doesn't have to be the rule follower. And in fact, he delights in breaking the rules, at least as Krishna. That's part of his delight. In stealing the butter and dancing with the gopis. And he doesn't have to follow the rules. Just like when I was a teacher, I remember one of my students said to me, why do we have to raise our hand but you don't? And I said, who's going to call on me? So it's exactly like that. You know, who's going to call on God? He doesn't have to raise his hand. He doesn't have to say, well, I'm going to follow. Of course, generally, Krishna follows the rules to set an example. Yad yad atarvati shestas. But he's not obligated. And we are always a servant, whereas Krishna is the master. Of course, Krishna is also serving in that he is also giving. To serve means to give. Krishna is giving everything. Eko bahunam yo vridati kaman. He's giving us the results of our activities. He's giving us the results of our desires. He's giving us light and heat and water and food and everything. But still, he's the master and we're the servant. Just like the senses have to serve the stomach is also serving the body. You cannot say the stomach is not serving, but still all the food has to go into the stomach. And there's a difference. Right? There's a difference between the brain and the body. Again, the brain is serving the body, but yet all the parts of the body have to obey the brain. So Krishna is certainly serving the living entities. Nitya nityanam chaitanya chaitanam eko bahunam yo vidadati kama. The one living entity is supplying all the desires of all the other living entities. But he's serving like a master. Like the head of a company provides for all of the workers in the company. But the head of the company is the one who has the vision. The one who takes the bulk of the profits and so forth. So that is another difference. And we can never become the master. We can never become the absolute master. We're always as a servant. So these are some of the truths of the personality of Godhead. That if we understand them, we can see reality. That he has a transcendent form that's never material. That he's never experiencing karma. That he's the master of the material energy, that he's the master of everything, And that we're stuck in this prison of the material world, which we'll discuss more tomorrow morning in Bhagavatam class, how it is we came to the material world and how is it that we're in this prison. So we've come to this material world as criminals. We're put in a body as a punishment. Now, if you try to get out of the body improperly, if you commit suicide to get out of the body, you simply get punished. You're not allowed to get out of your body whenever you want, unless you're Bhishma. But generally, you have your prison term. Okay, you have to stay in that body for a particular time. And we were just reading in the Bhagavatam in Chennai how when people come together, you know, in a business, in a family, some associates, it's because they have some collective prison sentence to serve. And then when it's over, then they disperse. So that's our situation. We're here serving a prison term. Whereas Krishna is coming to this world as the warden of the prison. He's not coming because he's a prisoner. And therefore he's not wearing a prison uniform that he's stuck in. I cannot leave this body whenever I want. I cannot go where I want. One devotee in Mayapur was telling the story of how she and her husband were involved in a terrible car accident several years ago, and how she said when she was in the hospital in the emergency room, she was really trying to leave her body and she couldn't do it. You can't just say, okay, I don't want to suffer this anymore. I'm tired of suffering. Have you tried that? You know, okay, I'm tired of suffering. I'm just not going to suffer anymore. It doesn't necessarily work. You may go on suffering. Whatever it is, you have to suffer. Your time isn't up yet. You go to the jailer and say, you know, can I get out now? He says, no. But that's not Krishna's position. And we are the servant. Now, of course, hearing all these things, we may just feel sort of despondent. Oh, okay, I'm just a servant, and I'm just stuck in this body, and I just have the results of my karma. And there's this big God up there, and he can just do whatever he wants, and he doesn't have to have a material body, and he just tells you what to do, and I just have to do whatever he says. Therefore, people don't like the idea of a personal God. They go for this impersonal idea because they think that God is a master like some material master. God is a master like we may have some experience in this world of an employer or a government or someone in charge of us who exploits us for their own purposes and keeps us in a position of suffering and servitude that we don't, against our will. And we may put that on God and then say, well, I don't want to serve that kind of God. And then one either thinks there's no God, or one says, oh, God is just a force and a light. But of course, there's more to Krishna than this. And that is that Krishna is very loving and very playful and very wonderful. And although we are forced to have a prison term, that force is due to our own foolishness, not to Krishna's evilness. Krishna doesn't just pick out people at whim and say, okay, you suffer and you don't suffer and you suffer and you don't suffer. But it's because there's justice in the universe. And Krishna desires that we get free of this suffering and we get free of the servitude to Maya, and instead we have our natural servitude to him, which brings us happiness. Krishna doesn't want our service because he wants to exploit us. Krishna wants our service because that's our natural position as an exchange of love. Just like in a family, the parents want the children to cooperate so they'll be a harmonious family. They don't want the children to cooperate so they can exploit them, hopefully. I mean, maybe in some families they exploit the children, but hopefully. You know, if you're running a business, you want the employees to cooperate with one another and cooperate with the vision of the business so that everybody will be happy, not so you can exploit them. The same in a community of devotees. The leaders want the devotees to get along and work together and work for the combined vision so that everybody will be happy. Now, of course, these material examples are incomplete because materially people do have desires for exploitation. But still, we can understand whenever we're in a position of authority, we want people to cooperate for their happiness, right? So what about the perfected being, Krishna? So Krishna wants our loving service, our willing service, our voluntary service. And part of the impetus for giving our voluntary service is understanding this wonderful feature of Krishna, that he really is the master. I won't become happy just by serving my desires independently. He really is all spiritual. He's not just another materially conditioned being who, if I serve him, I'll just become disillusioned and disappointed again. You know, we've been disillusioned and disappointed by serving people in this world, whoever they may be. If we give our heart and soul to another jiva separate from Krishna, whether they're our mother, our father, our husband, our wife, our children, our employer, our government, our whatever, we become disappointed. But no, Krishna's not like that. He's not a living being with a material body who's here by the results of his karma to exploit and enjoy the material world, and if we surrender to him, we'll simply be exploited. He's a transcendent personality who always exists above the material modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. He's simply bliss, and he's simply an exchange of love. He is a concentrated form of bliss and love. And therefore, serving him will give us what we really want. And once we become convinced of this, first we have to become convinced of it, at least on an intellectual platform. Then we can engage in the process of bhakti, which gives us a direct experience. Right? Raja Vijaya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idamutanam Prachaksha Bhagamandarnam. Prachaksha. You experience that God is a transcendent, wonderful being who is worthy of my love and service. Some other jiva who's just like me, another prisoner stuck in a material body experiencing the results of their karma, also under the control of the material modes of nature. If I make that person my absolute master, I'm not going to become satisfied. Why think Krishna is one of those people? Why not see that Krishna is the person who can actually give us satisfaction? So when I become convinced of that intellectually, then I start serving that transcendent person. When I start serving that transcendent person, prachaksha, I experience. If we're actually in the process of bhakti, you must experience. If you're not experiencing, you're not actually in the process of bhakti. Just like if you're eating, you must experience satisfaction, relief from hunger and nourishment. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, you're not really eating. Like maybe you're chewing gum, you know, you're moving your mouth and there's some saliva, but there's no actual nourishment. Or he said there's some parasites that are taking the nourishment, there's some offenses. So once we have at least some intellectual understanding, but Krishna is not like anybody else, he's different. He doesn't have a material body, he's not under the modes of material nature, he's not a cheater. He's not an exploiter. He's not here because he's a criminal. He's a perfect being. And I serve him with some love, some faith. I should get an experience that by serving Krishna, I feel susukham kartamavyam. I feel actual satisfaction, yadyatma supersiddhiti. I feel satisfaction in the self that I can never feel by serving an ordinary person. That's the ultimate proof that Krishna is not his body, that Krishna is not under the modes of nature, that Krishna is not subject to material karma. The ultimate proof is that when you serve Krishna, you get a very different experience. I mean, we can give proof from logic, we can give proof from the Shastra, but the ultimate proof is our own experience. If I serve an ordinary jiva separate from Krishna, I don't experience susukham kartamavyam and yadyatma supersiditi, do we? Anybody here found full satisfaction, unlimited expanding bliss from serving another jiva separate from Krishna? Anybody? No? But even as a beginner in bhakti yoga, at least sometimes you should touch some transcendental happiness. At least sometimes. One may not be at the platform where it's constant, but at least sometimes in the kirtan you should say, oh, what is this? Something beyond ordinary music and singing. And taking prasadam, at least sometimes. Like we have this also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Mahaprabhu is tasting some prasadam. He said, what is this taste? Sometimes we should be experiencing something that's not material. It should be a kind of happiness, a kind of satisfaction that has a different quality to it. Just like if you buy fruit ripened on the tree or on the plant, grown locally, has a different flavor, right? Correct? Has everyone tasted tree-ripened local fruit? Yes? No? And then you must do it. Put that on your to-do list. So I was already in my 20s, 20, 21, something like that. And I remember there was a peach orchard where the owners said, we've picked all the peaches for the market, but they pick with machines. So there's some peaches on the tree the machines don't get. They said, you can bring your devotees to the orchard and you can find any fruit that's left. So we picked the, we had baskets we were bringing back. It was a Sunday. We're bringing for the Sunday feast. But my oldest son at that time was quite small and he really wanted one of those peaches. So I asked the devotees, can I offer a couple of peaches? So I offered a couple in the car and I gave some to my son and he didn't finish. I was eating the rest and I thought, wow. Because they were tree ripened. Picked right off the tree when they were fully ripe. And I realized that until that day I had never eaten a peach. And after you have the real thing, then you never want to go eat the supermarket peach again. Another example we can give, just like right now my voice is being amplified over a microphone, has a certain sound. So suppose we stop using the microphone. Suppose I just speak loudly. Can you hear the difference in quality of the voice? Does it have a different vocal quality? The natural voice and the amplified voice. Can you hear the difference? So everyone can understand there's a difference between what is real and what is artificial. I can be the same volume. The microphone can be loud, and I can also talk very loud. The volume can be the same, but the quality is different. So if you have a real tree-ripened peach and you have one of those, you know, chemical-ripened peaches, the quality is different. And if we're really in touch with the Supreme Lord, the quality of our experience should be different. And by tasting that different quality, we also see the truth. Tatvadarshina. Not all, when you have pratyaksha, when you experience the happiness, susukam kartamavya, of associating with Krishna, you will also get clear vision. You will then be in touch with the absolute truth. So that is our goal, to be in touch with the truth. Anyone here want to be cheated? No. We all want the real thing. We want something that's authentic, that's real. So before we can be in touch with the truth and experience the truth and get clear vision from the truth, we have to understand at least theoretically what is the truth. How are you going to get a real peach if you don't even know in theory what is a real peach? How will you buy real gold if you don't know what's real gold? So therefore we have to learn from the Shastra, from Srila Prabhupada, from Swarup Damodar. He's instructing all the devotees. Now this is how you understand the absolute truth. So therefore studying the Shastra is very important. We should really understand what is the truth, what is not the truth. What is the actual position of Krishna? And then go from that, not just to know theoretically on the platform of the mind, but then to act on that knowledge so we experience on the platform of the heart. So we are living the truth. As Krishna says, my devotees are in my heart and I am in the heart of the devotees. So that our lives become a lived truth. And then we can never become bewildered, either spiritually or materially. And our life will actually become successful. So, we have time for questions? Yes? Questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Corrections? Yes. We'll try. You ask it and then we'll see.
How did Haridas Thakur came into chanting the holy name? At what age?
I have no idea.
What was the circumstance?
I've never read or heard that anywhere. I have no idea. And nor have I ever heard anyone ask that question before. So I've never even thought to inquire about it. I just don't know at all. I'm sorry. But now that you've asked the question, I will ask some other people who might know. We'll see if we can find out for you. I do not know, but I will endeavor to find out.
Well, you won't know it.
Why not? Anything else? Any more questions that I can't answer? Actually, when I teach Bhakti Shastri, I always tell my students, read the section beforehand and please try to bring a question to class that I cannot answer. We should give sweets or something, you know, if you stump the teacher question. Anybody else? Are you sure?
You mentioned about Christianity and Christian belief in passing. Now, some of the Christians believe that Jesus is a God and not the Son of God.
Most of them. Most Christians believe that Jesus is God, not the Son of God.
The second point they do is that eating flesh is allowed as per the Old Testament or something they claim.
Okay.
Is there a way you can convince those people?
Well, I don't think those two things are related. In other words, the fact that most Christians believe that Jesus is God and the fact that most Christians eat meat, I don't think those two things are related to each other. Convincing Christians to be vegetarian? Sure, you can. I mean, there's some Christian groups that promote vegetarianism, for example. The Seventh-day Adventists and the Mormons both promote vegetarianism. Now, not all of their members are vegetarian, but they preach vegetarianism based on the Bible. So the Bible clearly says in Genesis that the vegetarian diet is designed for human beings. And then later on, after there was a flood and there was nothing to eat, there was provision for humans to eat animals. But the rules for eating animals were very restrictive. So you could only eat certain animals killed in a certain way, and you couldn't mix there was a rule that you couldn't eat the flesh of an animal from which you took the milk, for example, which would mean if you drink cow's milk, you couldn't eat the cows. If you drank goat's milk, you couldn't eat the goats. Now that became interpreted later on to mean that you couldn't eat meat and milk at the same time. So you could eat. You had to have at least a 6-hour break. Seriously. So, you know, the strict Jews, they will not eat milk and meat at the same time. They have different dishes, they have different pots, they have different dish soap, different dish towels for their milk things and their meat things. And they have to have at least a 6-hour break between a milk meal and a meat meal so it doesn't mix in the stomach. But the injunction was, if you're taking the milk from an animal, you don't eat the meat. It wasn't, you can eat the meat if you cook it in a different pot. And then the Christians threw all those rules out. So that started with Paul. That didn't come from Jesus, or Jesus was Jesus' grand disciple, Paul. And he said, it's not what you eat that pollutes you, it's what you say. So when the devotees told that to Srila Prabhupada, he said, so you can eat stool and you won't be polluted? So that wasn't Jesus' teaching, and it wasn't the behavior of his disciples. It was something introduced later by a grand disciple after the disappearance of Jesus. But, I mean, any reasonable reader of the Bible can see that the original diet for human beings was vegetarian, that meat eating was a concession after the flood, and then it was a concession with very strong restrictions about what kind of meat you could eat under what conditions. I mean, the Vedas also allow meat eating with restrictions. You could kill this kind of animal if you offered to Kali, right? So many things. So if something is heavily restricted, that's an indication that it's not very good. If something's very good, you don't have to put all these restrictions on it. So you can use these kind of points. But there's not really a relationship between that and whether or not they say Jesus is God or the Son of God. That would really be irrelevant. I mean, there's also... I don't remember where. I have to go back and look up exactly where it is. But there's one statement, it's probably in Leviticus, that someone who kills an ox is equal to someone who kills a man. And part of the... This is really funny. Part of the rules for meat eating are that you can eat the meat, but you can't eat the blood. Now, how do you do that? So instead of taking it, that means, oh, I guess I can't eat the meat because then I'd have to eat the blood. What the Jews do, the Christians threw all these things out, they just eat anything. But what the religious Jews do is they take the meat and they soak it in salt to pull out all the blood. I think we call that following the letter and not the spirit, you know. Let me see how I can twist the verses to do what I want. But the Christians took all of those rules and they got rid of them. And one reason they did that, and this is a good lesson for us, is that Jesus originally appeared as a teacher within the Jewish community. And not all, but most of his disciples and followers were also Jews. He was preaching within his own community. And it was later Paul who said, well, we should bring this message of Jesus to the whole world. It shouldn't just be restricted to the Jews. But he said, how are we going to bring it to the whole world? Because Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, I haven't come to destroy any of the laws. He said, until the end of creation, all the laws will remain as they are. And Paul and his followers thought, well, if we ask everybody to follow all the Jewish laws, they're never going to follow Jesus. That's too complicated. So let's just get rid of all the Bible laws. That's what he did. He just got rid of all of them. He said, you don't have to follow any of them. Just follow Jesus. So he basically invented his own religion. And then later on, you know, when Christianity really became a separate religion, it didn't have any scripture of its own. You know, it had the Old Testament, which was the scripture of the Jews, but it didn't have its own scripture. So the church basically invented a scripture. They asked various people within the church, okay, you write this, you write that. They compiled different writings and said, okay, now this is our new scripture. So they invented all the rituals in various branches of Christianity were invented. They weren't given in the Bible, they weren't given by Jesus, because he wasn't starting a new religion. So the rituals, the prayers, the scripture, it was all an invention. Now I wouldn't tell that to Christians, but I mean that's it's quite interesting. And part of their way of inventing it was to throw out these restrictions. Some of them were restrictions on diet. Now you do have some Christian groups who try to go back to their roots and try to find, okay, what was the original lifestyle in the Bible? What were the original rules of the Bible? And kind of bring them back. Anything else? So are we ready to try to get to know Krishna as he is? Okay. Okay, so what are we going to do about that? What are we going to actually do in our life to try to know Krishna as he is? Meditate on how wonderful he is, huh? And here's somebody who has an eternal spiritual body. Here's someone who has very sweet pastimes. Here's somebody who's not under the control of illusion. Here's someone who's not going to cheat me because they're not full of lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. Why don't I get to know this person? And why don't I surrender to this person, which will then solve all of my problems of life? So thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.